Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
It's 11:36. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Joined now by Alex Renton, a journalist and now filmmaker, as well as author. His film, Boarding School's The Secret Shame Exposure, goes out tonight on ITV at 10:45. And we've met before, Alex, and regular listeners to this programme will be familiar both with your work and with my interest in it. Because I went to these kind of schools and my friends were abused, and only relatively recently have any of them begun to see justice. Would it surprise you if I said I was surprised by your latest work? I thought that the traffic was moving in the other direction, and yet what you have discovered in the film that is broadcast tonight and the article in yesterday's Sunday Times is that collusion and cover-up are still commonplace?
Yeah, I'm utterly shocked. And I think, you know, for all of us who had appalling experiences and have come out about them back in the day when we were at school, it's really, really shocking to find that this very complacent industry, which tells you again and again that that was then and this is now, are actually experiencing a really high level of criminal assaults on the children in their care.
Still. And when you add to that the kind of sense of what I guess we'd call reputational protection, so that some of these institutions aren't taking historical responsibility for things that went on in the past, you're left with a sense that nothing's really got better at all?
Yes, I mean, the issue about not taking responsibility is really important, because the one thing that survivors, you know, need more than money or is acknowledgement of their pain and some sort of apology. And what we found with the schools that we've targeted in the film, which had egregious cases of cover-up, is that, and many others, is that they'll issue nice messages of sympathy, but they say that wasn't us. We've changed our status, so we can't pay you.
Do they have any point at all? I mean, in terms of compensation, I can see that this is complicated. But they... Let me tell you about my prep school, which was owned by the headmaster. And the co-headmaster, who, looking back, must have also had a stake in it, is now in jail for sexually abusing some friends of mine. And no one's mentioned compensation, but of course compensation is, it's more than money, isn't it? It's an acknowledgement, it's a tangible measure of wrongdoing and remorse.
Yes.
But it's now owned by completely different people.
Yeah. And the same's happened with mine. They Ashdown House, yeah, which, you know, huge range of accusations and possibly more criminal cases to come, where they said, we became a charity, we're awfully sorry, but this isn't us. And strangely, found that they can't find out who insured the school before, in that period, which you'd have thought was pretty obvious. And the thing, so I think it's more than just the acknowledgement and the therapeutic value of that to victims. It's also that if the school's insurers realise that the schools are taking shortcuts and liberties with children's safety, then it's the insurers who will police the schools really well. So we need to make sure that happens as well.
It's also, not for the first time, an examination of how these things happen in the first place. In many ways, you're looking at the aftermath and the failure to change the culture, but you began, and your book addresses how these things go on. And the collusion is a strange word, isn't it? But I remember parents looking back who would have been encouraged not to make a fuss. That's the kind of thing we're talking about as well.
Yes, I've used
because it would have been bad for the victims to be the boy who was known to have been.
All sorts of reasons can be piled up. And for me, in some ways, they're quite similar to why a woman assaulted in Hollywood decides not to make a fuss, because to protect herself and protect her career and save embarrassment, and also the fear of not being believed. Mm. But it is dreadfully true. I mean, in my own school, I mean, I was, as I've told you before, abused by a violent teacher when I was 8 years old. My mother did make a complaint, but she was hushed up by the school. And the teacher, we've discovered in the programme, left very shortly afterwards, presumably with a ticking off, but was allowed to go on and teach at two more schools afterwards. And that's not the... I say this is systematic, because that's not the only case from our school.
No.
And so again and again, these very grand men in charge of these very grand institutions, they were mainly men, who could have stopped decades sometimes of abuse of children, failed to do so.
Because they didn't think it was such a big deal?
That's where it gets really odd.
And it's also, yeah. it's a fair, there's a degree of moral relativism here, because clearly things were not as understood or as reviled as they are these days.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have a big red alarm bell to hit in the way that you would hope, and I know the film finds in some ways that that isn't the case, as we'd hope, but people didn't think... I've mentioned to you before, I know a fellow who was abused by the Christian Brothers in Ireland and insists to this day that there was no harm at all, just a bit of a fiddle, you know, and you'd get, as in your case, you'd get a fruit gum at the end of it or something like that. And I don't believe him. I think it's done him untold harm. He's got issues with promiscuity. He's got issues with...
But that goes deep into survivor's psychology.
Yes. I mean,
as a small child undergoing that sort of trauma, and the added trauma of being... abandoned by your parents in these places, you have to normalise it to find something you can live with. And for some, that was saying, well, you know, I was fiddled with, I was raped, but it did me no harm. Indeed, it made me the tough guy I am now.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, because that'll play out in really bad ways.
Of course it will.
Later on, psychologically in life, that makes you weep.
It's
really
post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, it's like men who never mention their wartime experiences but spent the next 30 or 40 years being horrible to their family, who they loved.
And hating themselves, you imagine.
There's a lot of that, though.
So many cases of that. It's very clear. Which is why this new atmosphere, and it goes on with what's going... It's in chimes with what's going on elsewhere in the culture of coming up, confronting what happened to you, asking for redress, is healthy. This is making, I hope, a lot of people happier in the long term.
Let's have a little listen to some of your own testimony in tonight's film. Something that you, so about 2014, you first started to really address this and explain it and...
Yes, I realised I had to tackle it because other kids from my school were coming forward and seeking going to the police, and I realised I had evidence that would support what they were saying about the school.
So this is a clip from Boarding School's The Secret Shame that will be broadcast at 11:15, 10:45 on ITV tonight.
I remember very clearly the physical feeling of being pressed up against his sort of hairy tweed jacket while he had an arm around me and his other hand was going straight down the front of my corduroy shorts. And I remember quite distinctly being given the fruit gum afterwards, which I knew already was what you got if you submitted to this. But he was a very violent man, so I'm not sure what submission meant. I don't think you could have said no.
Sorry.
Okay, I just compose myself. It's funny how it's, you know, there were many times you tell it, didn't really go.
I've told you this before, Alex Renton. When I took a call from West Midlands Police a few years ago, shortly after my dad had died, and I presumed in the first case that's what it was about. I thought he'd sort of left his car somewhere, and it wasn't. It was because someone had done what you did and found the strength to come forward. And as I was speaking to the police officer, I remember as I walked across Waterloo Bridge, and she talked to me about boys, and I realised that these were men in their 40s, and she was seeing little boys sitting in front of her, and that's what people who watch the film tonight will see in that clip.
Yeah.
You just go back to being that 8-year-old boy, don't you?
Yes, and many of the people who write to me about their experiences, mean it, which is a wonderful thing, talk about becoming two people. The strong man who's not, or strong woman who's not harmed, can go forward and live a good life, and the little person they're left behind, and their need to get back in touch, reconnect with that. And I think psychologically, again, that's really interesting, and an indication of deep, deep trauma.
Yes, and ongoing trauma, although your advice presumably to anybody listening to this who's suffered similarly would be that talking about it and getting it out there is always going to improve.
Yeah, shed a light.
The situation. Yeah. I'm joined until 12 o'clock by Alex Renton, the author, journalist, filmmaker, and a man responsible for tonight's film on ITV. Boarding School's The Secret Shame. We could talk for days and not get close to concluding a subject such as this one, but we'll move on after the break to the very troubling, and even for someone who keeps a close eye on these matters, a very surprising discovery in the course of his latest work that in many ways it's still going on. Not just the cover-ups of what did go on, but the continuing conduct in the context of a country that really likes to congratulate itself on a regular basis for caring a lot more about these things than it used to. 11:49 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, joined for another 10 minutes, and we have a lot to squeeze in by Alex Renton, whose film Boarding School's The Secret Shame is broadcast on ITV tonight. Let's move quickly, Alex, if we may, to the modern day, to the investigations that you've undertaken into stuff that we would like to have described as historic, turning out to be nothing of the sort.
No, well, that's right. I mean, the ITN researchers on this film put a fantastic amount of work in and went to every police force in Britain. And we found these amazing figures. We asked them how many, since 2012, how many reports of sexual attacks inside boarding schools they'd had, and it was 425. Huge number, and from that, 160 people have been charged so far, 30 ongoing investigations. And this is in an industry that says, I quote, it's almost impossible that the things that happened to you, to me and to your school friends could happen today.
And why doesn't that get reported more, do you think? Because the latest one from my prep school in Worcestershire, a school called Winterfold, that didn't make the national newspapers at all, and I don't have brilliant news sense, as any of my former colleagues from the newspapers will attest. I thought it would, and they don't get the coverage that, for example, a Muslim taxi driver in Rochdale would get.
Absolutely, and the science teacher from my school who was convicted last April, virtually no press coverage at all. And that's very disappointing for victims, because they need that. I think there's two things going on, and both of them are worrying. One is that we know that some of the powerful schools are getting court orders to make sure they're not named.
Actual injunction type.
Injunction, yeah, they're called Section 39 orders. So that means school parents and...
How can that be allowed?
Because their argument is that this risks identifying the child victims.
Uh-huh.
But often, this is something that happened years on. And, of course, that doesn't even get into Ofsted reports. So a parent might find it very hard to know that the school's had a recent problem.
Right.
And the other issue is just straight intimidation of the media. I have to tell you that I was booked to appear on a BBC talk show just before I came on here, and they cancelled a few hours ago, saying that their lawyers were very worried that if we repeated the stats I just told you, then schools who hadn't had sex abuse attacks could sue. Which is, it sounds absurd, but that's a level of the fear that's there in the media about attacking these, or even reporting these powerful, powerful institutions.
Which are money machines as well, increasingly.
Well, they call themselves charities, but they don't do very much that's charitable that I can see.
I'm going to take a call from Malcolm, because he rang in pretty much as soon as he heard your name mentioned, long before you arrived in the studio. I'm not entirely sure what he has to tell us, but I'm as keen to hear it as you are. Malcolm is in Hemel Hempstead. Malcolm, good morning.
Good morning, James. Good morning, Alex.
What's on your mind, mate?
I was doing all right, actually, until you played Alex's clip just now, so I've had to make a few notes so I don't ramble. You're 100% right. Insurers will be the people who eventually regulate this, because the people involved for years have given safe reference to a dismissed teacher, and they've just moved on to the next school, and this spiral continues. Now, for many years, even after I saw my abuser sent down for 21 years, and very kindly, he managed to die in prison after only 6 years of it. But when he was sent down, I kept on asking a question of why was this allowed to happen and how come nothing was done to stop it, and. And it wasn't until I read the book Stiff Upper Lip did I start to almost shout at the book, because it was almost like a direct facsimile of everything and more rolled into one of what happened at our small little school up in Norfolk. And these things, it's not a blueprint. They get passed from person to person, and they start a new school, and other teachers bring their own bits to it. And for as long as you've got rules such as do not talk, do not tell, do not mention to your parents, when your parents are then conditioned that, unfortunately, your son may have mixed with people who aren't as honest as your child and may now be telling the most wild tales, please tell us. Going back to school was actually more traumatic, because you wondered who was going to get it next for having informed on what happened at the school. Now, this was back in the 70s and 80s. But that culture, until it actually becomes checked and inspected to the same degree as all other schools, you've got to go to the grassroots. You've got to change it at the point of inspection, the point of audit, because these schools are a huge financial cash cow. They're not going to let anything get in the way of that till ringing.
What made you come forward, Malcolm?
strangely enough, it wasn't until I'm sat in a room looking at my sons at the time, who were, oh, crikey, six and seven, about the age when I was sent to school. And I kept on thinking, you know, these lads are the same age as I was. And throughout my entire adult life, and that was a good 30 years, I never stopped looking for him, and I never stopped asking the question. But even during all the times when we did report it, and back then they even did an inspection, but the things that needed to be inspected weren't. And even as an adult, when I came forward, there was an initial reluctance the first time and then the second time. But fortunately, when we came forward again in 2009, attitudes seemed to have changed a little bit. And our trial was actually made very easy, because our headmaster had kept records on all 300 pupils, A to Z, in filing cabinets in his room, in his house, under an assumed name, and it was almost word for word verbatim what everybody had said.
Oh, my God. Mm.
And if we hadn't come forward, this guy would still have access to children today.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's done, but hearing Alex's clip just now, yeah, it kind of shook me. And my wife read this book about 3 years ago and said, one day you should read it, but not yet, because you're not ready.
Oh.
But it's yeah, Alex, bravo, mate. Just keep going, yeah?
Well, thanks, Malcolm. And well done you for coming forward, and well done you for not sending your own children to boarding school.
Well, I had a massive off with my parents. I had a massive off with my parents about it, because there was my mum. Rest her soul now, but my mother passed me a little flyer for this boarding school. And I think I said something along the lines of, I didn't have children to pass the parenting on to a stranger and then criticise the end result.
Yeah. You've got to be careful with that one, haven't you?
Well, even then, I made a comment about, you know, nothing will have changed, it will still be,
you know,
a hothouse of perverts. And she turned around, she said, oh, not that again. Oh, and even our parents, parents were conditioned to the... I would go as far as saying our parents were selected for their... wouldn't say gullible, but...
pliability.
Their manipulated. Yeah. And once... Yeah.
And to an extent, you know, there's lots of parents that, you know, have so many accounts who did collude. I mean, they colluded in you know, they believed their children needed to be miserable to become good citizens. So I believe that's
the title of your book, Stiff Upper Lip. Yeah. I mean, it's part of that thing. I'll just tell you something, Malcolm, because I think it will resonate with you as it did with me, and I've just mentioned it to Alex. When I was listening, I was off last week, I had the radio on a lot, and I was listening to coverage of that Barry Bunnell case, the football coach who the judge described as having undertaken abuse on an industrial scale. And I think the first man to come forward, years previously, his mum had said to him, if anything like that had ever happened to you, son, I don't think I could cope. And it was 6 days after he died that he finally walked into the police station. It's so, everything's so tied up, isn't it, with everything else.
My medical records even show it as early as 1978. I'm admitted to hospital. I've had a tooth smashed out because I wouldn't do what I was asked to do. I've got numerous notes in the medical records. Even the headmaster's wife at my next school states they had a review and they said that this child is damaged and needs help. They wrote to the previous head, who came back and said this child is out of control and only responds to the strictest of disciplines. So there's nothing like being sent to go and fetch your brand new cane from the room upstairs. And then bring it down to the classroom. So, no, James, I didn't send my children to a private school. They, funnily enough, turned out just fine.
Yeah. I remember that being sent to get the cane ritual. You made a really important point, Malcolm. It wasn't... the teachers were not legally obliged to report an accusation of abuse outside the school
to another authority.
Yeah. They weren't legally obliged to do it when you were at school, when I was at school. They are still not legally obliged to do it now. So whistleblowers have no protection, and children are still... the law does not protect them and ensure
just
that they're heard.
Talk us through briefly. Malcolm, thank you, mate. I'm glad that you've ended up in a better place. It sounds as if your wife has played a part in that as well. Because my friend Tom Perry is passionate on mandatory reporting as well. What exactly is it? Because it appeared, the first time I tackled it, it appeared that even some of the big children's charities didn't really understand.
Yes, Tom's in our film tonight. Yes. Mandatory reporting is this basic principle that you are legally obliged, if there's an accusation of abuse of a child in a protected in care or in any sort of institution that looks after children, you're legally obliged to tell an officer in the local authority. So someone outside can take a view of the case. It works in Australia, it works in lots of European countries. Tragically, we've been told here by the police and the NSPCC that there would be such a deluge of complaints if it was introduced that the system couldn't cope. So they're saying protecting children properly in this way is too expensive. It's a resources issue, not... And the government has been consulting on it since 2016, with no result. We have to have it if we're going to be serious about protecting children.
Because otherwise it gets... I mean, there's the commercial interest, there's the self-interest, there's the reputational interest to sweep it under the carpet and pass the problem along to someone else. Yeah. Sometimes overseas as well. We've been following a case involving one of my old schools where a teacher has ended up in a school on the other side of the world, and that is the best example of out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, that's a classic. They can no longer work in the UK, actually barred, and then go off to do it in Africa, and British-style boarding schools often. But there's a very clear change to the law, and we need it. Otherwise, things aren't, in essence, different from when you were at school or I was at school.
Alex Renton, that is always a pleasure. Well, as long as I've got one, you will have a space at the microphone in this studio. You know that. Boarding School's The Secret Shame is broadcast tonight at 10:45 on ITV. Alex's book, Stiff Upper Lip, is in... it's available in wherever all good books are available, and you should probably dig out yesterday's Sunday Times as well. Thank you.